You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vale, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to The Political Fix on this Wednesday morning, halfway through October, October 15th. I'm Heather Vale, and I am here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay's a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. And he's also the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business in the U.S. He also has a development lab which creates smartphone apps and other inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and internet marketer with a degree in philosophy. His political development is called The Solution, which is to cap and prioritize government spending. Guys, welcome to the show today.
Hello.
Hey.
Good morning.
Happy mid-October.
I didn't tell them who I am. Maybe no one cares.
We all care. We care deeply.
I'm Heather Vale. I'm a journalist in all media. And I hang out on this show every week with these crazy guys. Some wild and crazy guys.
We're the Festrunk brothers now, wonderful.
All right, so I'm back in Vegas. Last week I was in California, Disneyland, and back in Vegas. And it's all cloudy. What's going on?
Is it?
Yeah, maybe just over here.
It's a little cloud. Well, over here, you live like 5 miles from me. way over here
on the other side of the valley.
It's a different zip code, to be fair.
Yeah, but
a different
barely.
Municipality, but it's still, you know,
it's barely a different zip code.
Got some clouds. I wouldn't call it overcast, I call it cloudy. You called it cloudy, forgive me.
I called it cloudy.
I'm a little cloudy today. I was up very late last night.
Isn't that normal for you?
Not like this. This was, last night was, for those of you who aren't in Las Vegas, Zoe Bowie, Chris Phillips, a musician, a singer in town, it was his birthday, and he's launching a new thing. It's a new band, I can't remember, Devil Deluxe, and they do like 80s new wave. It was a lot of fun, except I didn't get home till 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Guys.
What? Rick,
we're talking about clouds and 80s new wave music. If we don't stop this intro, I'm going to rant about intros like this.
All right, Rick, so tell us.
You're warming up the audience.
Tell us about the snow.
They're warmed up. They're ready.
How do you know they're warmed up?
I know.
Tell us about Colorado.
Colorado's awesome. Right, what's the topic of the day?
No, tell us about the solution.
This is why we warm up, because we know the format.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Top story he's jumping into.
Jeez.
Already.
What the?
Okay. God's sakes.
What is the solution? The solution is to cap and prioritize government spending.
Yeah, I said that already.
Yes.
Moving on.
Okay. So one more level of detail. Step one is to cap spending so that it government grows slower than our economy. That's the only way our economy can ever catch up. The second step is to make sure that we take the money that's left, trillions of dollars, and we prioritize it more transparently than we ever have. And in the case of social spending, I say let's delegate that money to the states and have every state find a different way of prioritizing it. So we have 50 different experiments for how best to spend that money. And as the years go on, we'll reprioritize, throwing away the worst ideas and funding better and newer ideas. And so
this is like, okay, let's throw everything at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
No, actually, it's not at all.
That's what he's describing.
No, 50 different
experiments.
Yes.
Let's see what works. Yeah. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay.
Okay. All right. there's a nuance and there's a finer point to be made on it, but. Because the assumption is and the presumption is that the states themselves will prioritize before they start throwing just everything in the kitchen sink at the wall. They're going to say, we have X amount of dollars. we're going to prioritize from our end. Am I correct in saying that, Rick?
I think so, if I understood what you're saying correctly. Basically, okay. What I'm trying to say is that the transparency of a prioritized budget, and by the way, a prioritized budget is one where all the spending is ranked from top to bottom, so the most important stuff is on top and the least important stuff is on bottom. And as time goes on, the competition is going to force that bottom to become better and better and better. So we're going to fight over better and better ideas, and what used to be an awesome idea now becomes the worst idea of the bunch, and so it goes away funding even better ideas. And so that competition is what leads to constant improvement. But you can't have constant improvement unless you get rid of the worst stuff. So right. If you are a progressive and you want social justice, you got to have this competition, including tossing the worst ideas, so that, in other words, you need a spending cap. So cap and prioritize is not just a right-leaning thing. It's not about the cap. It's about the combination, cap and prioritize, so we actually constantly improve how we help people.
Okay.
There we go.
Sounds good. Yes. Commentary, yes. Jay?
No, that's what I'm saying. But the criticism was that it's throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks.
That's how he was describing it. Let's do 50 different experiments in 50 different states and see what works.
He says let's, you and I are going to have nothing to do with what Denver or Colorado does. He's going to have nothing to do with what Nevada does, California does, North Dakota, South Dakota, so forth and so on. So what the assumption is that the individual states will, the government, the federal government will say, here you have X amount of dollars. How do you want to spend it? They will then come up with the great ideas instead of saying, we want to, build a bridge to nowhere. We want to do ridiculous things, feel good legislation. They're going to do things that are effective for a couple reasons. One, because they now look and they say, okay, we have this chunk of money and that's it. And we don't want to look stupid in front of the other states.
Yeah. Okay. So
that's
each
my
state,
presumption.
Okay.
That's the 50 experiments.
Yeah. So you're saying the 50 experiments is actually going to be like a competition to see who can have the most effective experiment.
It is now. I mean,
They're not doing it now.
No, but it's a competition. They vie for businesses to come here. They say, we offer the best. There's no reason why every state, every governor of every state thinks that every business in the United States should be in their state. They are an advocate for their state. They have drunk their state's Kool-Aid, and they think, Jerry Brown thinks everybody should be in California. Brian Sandoval thinks everybody should be in Nevada. Chris Christie in New Jersey, so forth and so on.
Now, I believe a lot of states advertise in California saying, hey, move your business to our state, because they know that a lot of California regulations and high tax rates are annoying to business owners and even the employees.
Yeah.
So, and I have to mention that Nevada does too. Like Heather, on your drive to LA and back, did you not see any billboards saying, hey, move your business to Nevada?
No, because I took an airplane.
Oh, you did?
So yeah.
Flew to LA from Vegas?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a 2.5-hour drive.
It's a 50-minute flight. No, it's a 4 to 5-hour drive, but it's a 15-minute flight.
Yeah.
But if you include time going to the airport, going through security, waiting,
and
bloody blah. Yeah.
The way I drive, it's a 2.5-hour drive.
Oh, okay.
I can do it 3.5.
Zoom.
This is actually the first governor in Nevada to actually try to actively, proactively try to bring business here.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So, well, businesses should come here because...
Of course, that's what I do for a living. Yes, of course.
I thought you only brought Israeli companies here.
You're the golden...
Well, look, if I end up talking to somebody and they don't happen to be an Israeli tech company, I'm not going to say... Let someone else talk to you. I'll have that conversation with them too, but my focus is Israel tech company.
Okay.
But I will. I'm happy to talk to anybody about why they should move their business to Nevada, and specifically Southern Nevada.
Maybe you should tell Rick.
Anyways. Rick, move your business here.
I have a 5% income tax rate in Colorado, and it does annoy me. I mean, why should I pay all that money to Colorado? I don't.
We have no personal income tax here.
I'd rather move to no personal income tax state. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not that far.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But we have things like water.
We have water.
I don't know about that.
We have water.
Your reservoir is down to what, a third of its normal level? Scary. Scary.
All right, that's enough of that.
Our water comes
from... People who are thinking of moving here, there's plenty of water. Stop it. Don't listen to Rick.
Our water comes from the Colorado River, so...
Yes.
Which if the water's stopping, it's your fault.
No. It's the Colorado River...
And if you have water, then we have water.
No. Colorado River's on the other side of the mountains.
Yeah.
No, the Colorado River feeds into Lake Mead.
Yeah. Right.
Through the Hoover Dam.
But right. Denver is on the other side of the mountain.
Side, yeah.
I'm sure they do some pumping and get some water over the continental divide, but almost all of our water, I believe, comes from the rain that falls on this side of the continental divide.
Oh, and then you dam it off so that it won't continue flowing to the Hoover Dam where it's supposed to go.
No, you got the geography all wrong. There are mountains down the middle of Colorado. Denver is on the eastern side of the mountains.
Okay.
Yeah. And just so you know, we're actually talking about some desalinization projects here to solve water issues.
Yeah, that's the Will Ferrell Move the Ocean.
Yeah.
Right. There's the who is that that actor who came out in favor of the River Rising movement?
I have no idea.
Robert Redford. He came out in favor of, River Rising, and Will Ferrell came out with a charity called Move the Ocean. It's easier.
Yeah, let's move it.
Yeah.
Why not?
Desalination is basically Move the Ocean.
Yeah, okay.
Bit by bit, yeah.
Yeah. You just need a big vacuum. And you suck in all those seals, and then you have a seal filter that stops the seals, and then you end up with the water.
It'll be like, further south.
Tastes like seal, but it's good enough.
No, it doesn't. Desalinated water tastes fine. I had it a long time ago when it really wasn't perfected, and it was just awful.
Did it taste like seal?
No, it didn't taste like seal, but this because it was in because I had it in. I had it in Israel where they really perfected this technology, but it was like a very early iteration of it, and it was just not. I could tell that it wasn't. There was something about it. It was. It had a different texture to it. It had a different. It just. I was like,
I'm sorry. If your water has texture,
yeah, that's bad.
Something's wrong right there. Right there.
Texture.
Something's wrong.
Any matter has texture to it.
Why did you have some textured water? Here we go. All righty then.
Our top story.
Do we have time? All right.
We have time to talk about this.
All right. So we'll do the top story, then we'll take a break and come back and talk about it. So this is a story that won't leave us alone. It keeps growing and growing. A second Dallas hospital worker who provided care for the first Ebola patient diagnosed in the U.S. has tested positive for the disease, which means the problem goes beyond just one individual being careless in putting on and removing personal protective garb. It's not clear how the second worker contracted the virus. Authorities declined to say what position she holds at the hospital or the type of care she provided to Thomas Eric Duncan, who was diagnosed with Ebola after coming to the U.S. from Liberia and then died on October 8th, which we talked about previously on the show. Officials have said they also don't know how the first healthcare worker, 26-year-old nurse Nina Pham, became infected, which was just a few days ago. But the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said an additional healthcare worker testing positive for Ebola is a serious concern. Yeah, I would say so. What happened in Dallas, regardless of the reason, is not acceptable, and it should not have happened, said Anthony Fauci, who's director of the Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases of NIH. The worker at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital was monitoring herself for symptoms, and she reported a fever yesterday, and they put her in isolation within 90 minutes. Dr. Tom Frieden, who's head of the CDC, has acknowledged that the government was not aggressive enough in managing Ebola and containing the virus as it spread from an infected patient to a nurse. The second case might help health officials determine where the infection control breach is occurring and make practices safer for health workers everywhere. As an example, if both healthcare workers were involved in drawing Duncan's blood or placing an intravenous line or suctioning mucus, then that would be recognized as a high-risk activity, and it might also reveal which body fluids pose the greatest risk. I would assume that they all do, but however, I guess they're going to do some tests. Emergency responders in hazardous material suits began work before dawn this morning to decontaminate the Dallas apartment of the second hospital worker. Apparently, she lives alone and has no pets. Frieden outlined new steps this week that are designed to stop the spread of the disease, including the creation of an Ebola response team, increased training for healthcare workers nationwide, and changes at the Texas hospital to minimize the risk of more infections. All this came about as the World Health Organization projected that the pace of infections accelerating in West Africa is up to as many as 10,000 new cases a week within 2 months. And the new case supports nurses' claims this week that they have inadequate training and protective gear to take care of Ebola patients. The nurses' union described how Duncan was left in an open area of the emergency room for hours. It said that staff treated Duncan for days without the protective gear that should have been used, and that hazardous waste was allowed to pile up to the ceiling as safety protocols were constantly changing during that time. Now officials say at least 76 people at the hospital might have been exposed, and all are being monitored for fever and other symptoms. Now that's up from the last time we talked about this. It was close to 50 people that they said may have been exposed. And also not included in this story, I also read yesterday that Nurse Pham's boyfriend also has Ebola. He has not been tested for Ebola, but he had Ebola-type symptoms as of yesterday. So that may be three of them now that we're talking about. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, let you guys think about this, and we'll come back with some commentary on this ongoing story. We'll be right back with you on The Political Fix. Okay, welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts Jay Emmernick and Rick Raddatz. Before the break, I read the top story from the Associated Press, which is telling us there's a second hospital worker in Dallas who has tested positive for Ebola after treating the patient who brought Ebola to the States a couple of weeks ago. So that's two hospital workers definitely have tested positive, despite all the claims that it wasn't going to spread. And I've also heard that one of their boyfriends has symptoms, so he may be tested within the next day or two. We'll find out more about that as we go. But, hey, guys, what do you think about this story about the spreading Ebola?
Jay? Well, this falls under the category, unfortunately, of I told you so. I believe I was very, very skeptical of the CDC's initial response. And they, you know, it'd be my biggest criticism actually of this administration is that they tend to come out with some statement without sort of gathering everything together, and then they end up having to backtrack. They've had to do this several times, and then in the other category of the NIH executive or whoever he was who said this shouldn't have happened, I have a message for him. Hey, buddy, thanks. No kidding. This shouldn't have happened. I could have done that. I want my big government salary, for God's sakes. And then there's another piece of this too, and I don't think people are taking it as seriously as they should. You know, a lot of people tend to say, like, okay, well, so you know, two people have died from Ebola, but you know, this many people have gotten killed by cops. This many people have this and cancer and all that. It's a completely those are separate issues. There's a disease which we do not know how it spreads and how you can get it is very different than any kind of police brutality or any other issue that you may want to try to tie into this.
Well, they say that they know how it spreads. They say it only spreads through
apparently they don't
bodily
though.
Exchange of bodily fluids. No, what they're trying to figure out is how the nurses exchanged bodily fluids with this guy when they were supposed to be wearing protective gear.
Right. And then the CDC threw her under the bus, which is nice to do to somebody who, you know, just contracted a deadly disease by following your procedure.
Yeah,
they, and I have to say, I was always a big fan of the CDC because I felt them to be apolitical. They never, you know, in my recollection, really sort of ever scrambled to sort of cover their own asses. And this time they are. This time it's like nobody knows what's going on, and they spoke too soon without knowing what they were talking about. And I think, I don't think there's time to do an investigation of them now, because I think we have to really figure out, you know, what's going on. They say they have all these, they're going to form an Ebola strike team. What do they call it?
An Ebola. Where is that? Wasn't it a risk prevention team or something?
A great time to do that would have been a month ago when we first heard about this.
They also said that the government wasn't aggressive enough in dealing with this when it first came to
light.
So
the CDC the CDC is the government.
Well, okay, so they're saying that
they're throwing everybody under the bus.
They're throwing themselves under the bus too, though. So, I mean, equal opportunity bus throwing.
Yeah.
Rick, what do you think?
Well, I think the CDC absolutely blew it, and I can trace the very moment when, and we talked about this on the show a week or two ago, when the CDC had what's his name, Thomas Friedman or something, when the CDC says, "I am absolutely confident, you know, it won't spread in the U.S." That's the wrong approach for the CDC head. That's the right approach for maybe the president or a politician to kind of, you know, be confident and optimistic or whatever, and show that they have confidence in their team. But the CDC head's, you know, that person's role is to be the aggressor on the other side, saying we need to do this. We need more funding. We need more. More access into the hospital. We need our experts on site, and we need these permissions to do it or whatever. And we need to set up these following, you know, five Ebola crisis centers around the U.S. And you got to be smart about it. Where, like, oh, now that several people have got it via the spread, now we're going to send in task forces with our experts. I mean, why wasn't that the first thing that was done, period?
It's one of the habits of highly effective people is to always be proactive. They're being reactive, and that's exactly the wrong way to do it.
Well, the good news for the rest of society, I mean, it's bad news for the people that have already been exposed to it. The good news for the rest of society is that I think the CDC is doing a good job of being reactive. In that, now that it's clear they underprepared and underreacted, now they are coming up stronger, and so I think the right things are going to start happening, and so I do have confidence in the system overall, but I have to admit I'm trying to calculate at what point do I start buying a bunch of food to keep in my basement. So that if society melts down, because I looked up pandemics in the past, you know, we got the bird flu of 1918 and so on. But if you go back in the history, I mean, like every 50, 100 years or so, there's something that wipes out a third of the population.
Wow.
And while it's true that in modern countries like most of Europe and certainly the U.S., and maybe Canada is just because everyone stays alone in their house because it's so cold outside. it's going to be harder for those kinds of diseases to spread. But you know,
Ebola probably can't withstand those freezing temperatures anyhow. I mean, the virus just can't exist. So,
well,
that's good news then.
Wayne and Schuster.
Yeah. Yeah, you can move either to the moon or the Arctic Circle.
I don't know if it has to be that cold. Actually, viruses actually need very specific temperatures.
All right, I was kidding.
Yeah. They
exist in the body, 98.6. Yeah. Like.
Right, yeah. So if it becomes airborne, it can't exist anymore.
Airborne virus. It's done through bodily fluids. It's not an airborne.
It's not an airborne.
Okay, well, that's what I'm saying. Yet. So that's what prevents it from becoming.
Canada's irrelevant to the situation. It doesn't matter if someone's in Canada or not.
Okay,
now so it's around a continuous loop. Canada is irrelevant.
Okay.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Heather. Calm down.
I'm going to make a prediction that the U.S. does a pretty good job containing Ebola. However, in the meantime, it's just going to ravage the poorer nations of the earth.
Yeah.
And keep on spreading, because you know if you think the Dallas hospital procedures were bad, third world countries. Yeah. I mean, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
Get a load of Cameroon. I guess the thing that really burns me about this actually is two things. One, obviously, people are going to suffer and die because of their incompetence. But they were so arrogant, so dismissive, and just downright wrong about people like me who were saying, "Wait a minute, I think there's something more here." And they were like, you know,
yeah,
silly rabbit, tricks are for kids, and then you know, move on. And yeah. I really, you know, I don't know. I'm waiting for my apology from the CDC.
I like the. Have you guys seen the movie World War Z, where the virus spreads and changes people into zombies in like 11 seconds, and you know, it's just total fiction, of course. But I loved how the Israeli minister, or whatever role he had in the government, it's like his duty as part of government is, if everyone else agrees there's no threat, his duty is to assume that there is a threat. So when reports of zombies come in, he assumes, he's forced to assume by his role, that it's true. So he starts building walls. I think that's the role that the CDC is supposed to be playing, is not reassuring the public. Their job is to alert us to the dangers and scare the hell out of us. Meanwhile, the politicians are going to do whatever they do, and right. in the middle someplace is the right response.
Right.
Okay, so you're suggesting that the CDC act in extreme terror spreading.
No. They need to be truthful, and realistic, but also not, you know, but to tell us, you know, panic is not going to do you any good right now. We're doing A, B, and C.
Okay, well, if they do what Rick suggested, then they are going to create panic.
So I'm disagreeing with Rick and tempering.
Okay.
No. I don't think he should be a fearmonger. I just don't think his job is to reassure the public. I think his job is to aggressively state the reality and to be aggressively proactive when something like Ebola enters the U.S. Of course, you send your top people there, and you go from there. So.
Yeah, and how about stopping flights from the infected regions?
Oh, temporarily. His argument that doing so would only hurt our ability to help them is BS. Because the way we can help them is by sending military planes, and we are, with military personnel and those kinds of trained staff related to like military medicine. They're in there to kind of get order going again and to tamp things down. That's the kind of help that they need, and any civilian resources can fly on those military planes. You can still have planes, just only the ones you want.
Yeah.
And I think we discussed this last week that you know if you are afraid of a right of return, then if you think people have a right of return, I say no, they have a right of conditional return, meaning you can come back as long as you quarantine yourself for 21 days, even if you don't have symptoms. You know.
Yeah.
You know, something like that, and then we get control of this, because there's only like 150 people a day, I think, that come in from these three countries. But
how many people are they going to have contact with?
Yeah,
I mean, this is how these things spread.
Thousands. So you're by turning that off, you really, really, really help. And look, a lot of business these days, it's nice to do it in person. Doesn't have to be. You can do it via Google Hangouts. You can do it via instantteleseminar.com, my company. you can plug in there. So you can do it via a lot of different Skype. You can do it via a lot of different mechanisms. And so buy stock in those companies.
Okay. Is Instant Teleseminar a public company?
No, it's not. You have to give me a really good deal to get my stock.
Yeah.
Okay. But however, they could buy a monthly access membership.
Yeah, you can buy a subscription. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, guys, we're going to take another break here. We'll be back in a few minutes with Inside Perspective with Jay Amernick. We'll be right back with you on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vale here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And before the break, we were talking about our ongoing Ebola story and what the government could have done better. Now, Rick, what can we say about cap and prioritize that goes in with the Ebola story? How could that have solved anything?
Well, if these poor countries were actually more modern in their government structures, then they wouldn't have the extreme poverty which allows Ebola to spread like it does. And so it's nothing that can be done now. I mean, this is not a short-term fix, or it's certainly not a reactive fix. But I saw a conservative commentator make that point that freedom is actually preventative in this case, even though it doesn't help now that it's happened.
Okay. All right, so now we have our segment that we call Inside Perspective. This is hosted by Jay Emmernick, who has some experience working within the government parameters, and he's going to tell us his inside perspective. Take it away, Jay.
Thank you. Okay, so this week, this is actually something we touched on last week, and it is this. It is simply that the inside perspective and the outside perspective, as the show progresses, are coming much closer together, and which is exactly what Cap and Prioritize is designed to do. Is to sort of get everybody on the same page, and just as a quick note, I will put a finer point on what Cap and Prioritize could have done for Ebola, and that is it will make countries decide if they want that foreign aid from the U.S. because we're going to be much more thoughtful about who we give money to. Again, especially in the case of Liberia, do we want a dictatorship run by Charles Taylor, or do they want to have a more democratic system to get our money and become more modern and join the 21st century? But again, so back to the inside perspective and outside perspective for coming closer together. What I offer from the inside perspective is some sort of tactical knowledge, my perspective, and how to get our foot in the door and how to actually be effective in bringing change about. Because there's a lot of sort of bad methodology out there of people who've never done it before, and what they do is they protest, they hold up a sign. As a matter of fact, I saw a guy bicycling down Las Vegas Boulevard. I can't remember what he was protesting, but he's really not getting anywhere. He's not moving.
Oh,
the ball
he
forward.
Does that every day. He does that 365 days a year.
Well, he's a lunatic. And he's he may actually be unbalanced. I don't know. But again, there's still people who are not. Okay, well, there are people who are who are normal everyday people who will sit and they'll protest, they'll join a march, they'll do these things. That usually doesn't do much good, other than it makes you feel good. So again, what I offer is sort of the way to go about getting the attention of the elected officials and then bringing the change about. And then the inside and the outside are coming closer together. As the show progresses.
Come together right now.
All right.
So Rick, what kind of kumbaya statement do you have to go with Jay's little feel goody perspective?
We needed to feel good after that Ebola story, for God's sake.
Yeah, no, I agree with Jay 100% the whole point of Cap and Prioritize
kumbaya,
is
my Lord.
The whole point of Cap and Prioritize is, in fact, to solve the actual problem. And when you solve the actual problem, a symptom of that, a positive symptom, is that people who normally have different views come together. And so, Jay comes from kind of an inside / democratic left kind of point of view. I come from a outside democratic right point of view. Or Republican right point of view, and so we are coming together, but we're coming together towards this lighthouse. It's neither right nor left. It's this shining light in the distance, in the fog, called Cap and Prioritize, that can unite all of us.
The shining beacon of Cap and Prioritize.
The beacon of hope.
Yes.
Shines through the fog of political animosity.
Right, because ultimately what it will do, it'll take away the real wedge issues.
That is our slogan. No wedgies.
No. Wedge and wedge issues.
That's our platform. No wedgies. We're the no wedgie party. We are against wedgies. Totally wrong.
Okay.
Jay, back to you, Jay.
I think we lost Jay.
No, I'm here. No wedgies. Because again, when I worked,
Jay, I'm sorry for bringing up such personal memories. of your
okay, yeah, this segment has been completely ineffective. It's just like, oh, let's all agree. Yeah, wonderful.
Agreement is good. That means we're moving forward. That means we're making progress. The issues I worked on when I was in public policy and government affairs were completely bipartisan.
Okay. Jay, if this is going to be happening,
yes,
if you're going to be coming closer and closer to me on Cap and Prioritize, and I'm going to stay with Cap and Prioritize, then I suggest maybe we need to change your segment, and you need to become the devil's advocate.
Yeah.
You need to attack Pentonomics, the larger philosophy, and Cap and Prioritize in particular, from each new way, and then challenge me or something like that.
I will bring up what the stumbling blocks are going to be and our biggest challenges are going to be.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah,
you don't have to take that stance, but you know that other people
Just so everyone knows, I agree. I'm on board with Pentonomics. I will tell you from my perspective what are going to be the difficult.
Okay,
because what we can agree on for sure is that not everybody's going to agree with this right out of the gate. So, yeah, take their perspective.
Because it can be described in a very simple way, but it's actually quite nuanced and sophisticated. And there are things that are going to enrage the left and enrage the right.
I took my dog for a walk this morning, and I walked past a truck that's parked doing some work across the street, and they had a bunch of stickers on the pickup truck, and one of the stickers said, I would rather be out killing communists. These are the people that live in our country. These are the people that we have to deal with. So why don't you take their perspective?
I would suggest that I would prefer a guy have that bumper sticker on his car. One, so he's fully identified, and two, I think that's his outlet because he's actually probably not going to go out and kill communists.
The
guys from ISIS who are beheading every Westerner they can get their hands on. So I think that's the real extremist. I think that guy just has a sort of almost bizarre sense of humor to have that as a bumper sticker, but
well, he's trying to get publicity, and I guess it worked.
Yeah, we're talking about him on the show.
You think this random contractor
He was doing some
work across the street on one of the houses. Yeah.
All right. Here's a little piece of free advice from Jay, the business consultant. Do not have anything political on your unless of course you're in the political business. Political on your business.
Okay. Finally. Yeah. I disagree.
Okay, cool.
Okay, because we are not going to make progress here by being afraid to say how passionate we really are about issues X, Y, or Z. In fact, we have to become more passionate, more concerned about government in order to have enough energy to break past the stalemate and actually implement Cap and Prioritize. So I'm actually counting on the passions of the right and the passions of the left. Because we need maximum freedom and maximum social justice. Nothing less will give us the energy to get rid of this weird entitlement society we have right now, which is kind of like we know it's going to kill us in time, but we can get by for now. You know, we need to get some of that energy going back. So, yeah, go for it.
Okay, so the challenge is that I hire this guy. He drives up, and again, just so you know, I'm as anti-communist as the next guy, but –
Nah, he drives up. Grew up on the Israeli kibbutz.
I did not. he drives up with that bumper sticker, and I'm like, yeah, you know what, buddy, I'm going in a different direction.
You know what? And he knows that, and he is willing to take that hit because he believes in his principles so firmly.
Even though I agree with him, I'm anti-communist. I agree with him.
Do you want to kill all the communists?
No, I not personally.
You want someone else to kill them.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So here's the deal.
Let's crazy.
Okay. We call the outside perspective affectionately Rick's rant. So we should
Not there yet.
I know. But okay. But for Jay's perspective, if this is going to morph into a devil's advocate thing where he he introduces a new stumbling block every week. So we have Rick's Man and Jay's Stumble. Is that the plan?
Jay's Stumble?
The Fall of Jay?
I'm just trying to tease Jay a little.
Inside perspective. Let's just leave it as the inside perspective. For God's sake.
Okay.
Well, we could think about that. We can mull that one over for a week or so and see.
Yeah, I already did. We're sticking with the inside perspective.
Okay.
Processed it.
All right. So speaking of outside perspective, a.k.a. Rick's Rant, we're going to have that coming up next. But first, we're going to take one last very short break, and we'll be right back with you on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Before the break, we were talking about Jay's inside perspective, which was really just about how the inside and the outside are agreeing, and we no longer have two perspectives on this show, so we're going to change things up in the future. Jay's going to be a devil's advocate, bringing your thoughts to the stage so that we can tackle what people out there think. So, if you have something that you want to add and you want Jay to deal with on a future show, give us a call on the air at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or email jay@politicalfixradio.com and tell him what your issues are and why you don't think any of this will work, and he'll bring it to the table for Rick to rant on. Now, speaking of that, it's time for our outside perspective, because Rick Raddatz, he's a philosopher, but he really has no experience in government. He's just got this idea, this philosopher kind of idea that we are slowly molding like clay and bringing into reality. So, here's the outside perspective, a.k.a. Rick's Rant.
Okay, now, I was going to rant about something else, but after that little intro, I'm going to rant about the people who dismiss philosophers and philosophy. Now, okay, it is true that the vast majority of political philosophers should be ignored completely, okay, because they're just wrong and they're idiots to boot. Okay, for example, Karl Marx was a philosopher, and he made a lot of amazing little insights and statements. He even named capitalism capitalism. But boy, was he wrong when it mattered, okay? So we should have ignored a lot of what he concluded, even if some of his insights are correct. And so it's fair. I understand the impulse, the knee-jerk reaction to just dismiss political philosophy as an idea. But darn it, every couple hundred years, political philosophers have something really important to say, and it matters. And I'll phrase it this way. When a brand new insight in political philosophy actually solves real-world problems, and it solves it in a way that connects with ways we've solved other problems, similar problems in the past, then you got to step up and pay attention, and you got to take the time to study that philosophy, because that's what's going to change the world next. And that's what Cap and Prioritize is, because Cap and Prioritize is doing to collective resources or government resources exactly what capitalism does to private resources, what democracy does to political resources, what diplomacy and national defense do to foreign resources, what cap and trade do to future resources. It economizes them. And so you've heard the word pentanomics in this show a couple times. That's the pentanomic model of government. That's the new philosophy here, and it's based on 227 years of actual success with capitalism, democracy, and national defense as we understand these in the modern sense. And so the pentanomics is based in reality, and it's not just an idea. It's the idea.
All right. Well, you know, you're still reminding me somewhat of the Mad Prophet from Network, but we're going to give you... We're going to give you credit for maybe having...
Open your window and shout, I'm mad as hell.
Mad as hell, and I'm not going to drink it anymore. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's a reason why we have that image of philosophers. You know, philosophers are either navel gazers or they're madly shouting what people should do out the window. So, you know, and you're kind of... a mixture. You've got some of both sides there. So now, however, there is a lot more behind it, but at least I got some passion out of this show instead of just all this agreement that we had going on.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, okay. So now Rick's all riled up. Jay, what do you think?
I will actually add to the defense of philosophers because
he's going to agree again.
It is I'll explain why.
Okay.
Because it's the basis for any type of action. First starts off with a philosophy that turns into an idea that turns into action that turns into progress.
Right. That's basically what I said in the intro.
No, she's all wrong.
That's what got him all riled up. That's what I said.
The vast majority of times it goes idea, political nothing. Fight. Okay. And then maybe action. Idea, political fight, action. That's how it normally goes. Right. Philosophy is where you take the ideas and you keep on fighting and you keep on arguing and you keep on figuring out and you get better and better and better. And every now and then you make a leap. And again, it's every couple hundred years. It's no more frequent than that. But every couple hundred years you make a really important leap. And it's those leaps, you got to somehow distinguish between the average philosopher who is an idiot and should be ignored and me who it might be crazy, but I've got a point. And because it's based in reality. That's the
difference. So if the leaps only come every couple of hundred years, what the heck are all the philosophers wasting their time over? Are they all gunning to be that one that takes the leap?
They're all trying. They are all trying in their own way. They have a lot of pressures on them to be kind of consistent within a certain range of ideas. And yet they're also trying to break through that range and come up with new and different ideas. And so some of them are rewarded for crazy ideas because you got to at least think about them. And in fact, you have to study even the crazy ideas to know how to defeat them. So it is a really, it actually is a pretty good competition of ideas. But the problem is that for most political philosophy, especially in the academic world, it's not connected to the real world. And so it allows them to kind of paint the inside of their box in pretty colors and then repaint it and repaint it and repaint it and get finer and finer detail without realizing that they're in a box and the truth is outside of the box.
Okay. So would we call people like Malcolm Gladwell and Seth Godin philosophers?
They're definitely philosophizing, and they're thinking about things in a deeper way. And so I do respect them as thinkers. However, in the case of political philosophy, you have to go a little deeper than where they go. In the case of Pentanomics, we have a founding argument, a foundational argument that we build everything else on top of. And it says basically that if you have nobody on Earth, then you have no conflict. But no ambition, no resources. Everything's just a rock is a rock, not a resource. But if you have one person, that's an individual. If you have two, you can have a collective. If you have three, you can have voting. You can have politics. If you have a fourth person outside of that little society, you can have foreign resources and ambition and so on. And if you imagine a fifth person in the future, you have future ambition, future resources, and conflict between the living and the future. So. And there's no place else to add people. So in Pentanomics, we have this foundational argument that says these five conflicts are everything. It's all human conflict right there on your hand, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And so that's really what some of these great thinkers are missing is this connection to fundamental truth that you can build on. Because imagine a skyscraper without a foundation. Okay, that's like the towers in Venice that are tipping over. So you need to have the foundation first, and then you can build on that. And I will say this. Most philosophers are so bad at building a foundation that works in the real world that their foundation is worthless. And most real-world people are so bad at building a philosophical foundation that their best attempt, although better than the average philosopher, still is missing something. And so I think what I bring to the table is as an entrepreneur myself, I bring the real world considerations in with the philosophy, and it's that combination that I think has made Pentanomics break through this box that we were in.
Okay. Jay, do you want to disagree?
My point is actually also that I wasn't saying all philosophy comes up with great ideas. Many of them, as Rick suggests, do sit in a box and they think and they think and they think and they come up with some concept that actually looks great on paper, but when you actually bring it into the real world is a disaster. Rick actually straddles both,
both those worlds. But they think, therefore they are.
No. I think, therefore I am. I don't know about you guys. See, it's that kind of subtlety that's actually really important.
Well, he's talking about philosophers sitting in a box thinking. So if they're sitting in a box thinking... No,
but you were referencing Descartes with his cogito, I think, therefore I am. And but you phrase it as we think, therefore we are, and that is not...
No. I'm saying the philosophers sitting in the box thinking...
Yeah.
Exist because, and it's not, and we can't say that we're going to open the box and see whether the philosopher is alive or dead, because if they're in there thinking, then they are. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, unless they happen to be in a hospital in Dallas, then.
Yeah.
Then they're not, off. Yeah. But then they're not thinking either. So.
Well, as long as we're talking about philosophy here, one of the greatest mistakes that the philosophers make is they pursue some sort of ideal. And then they try to say, therefore, we should do this in the real world. And that bridge between, or that leap between the ideal and the real world is dangerous, very dangerous. And so a great philosopher like John Rawls, who's perhaps the most important political philosopher of the 20th century, his whole thing was that justice is fairness. Okay? Well, in the ideal... Everything good is everything good, and so you can equate these things. But then you map it to the real world, and you have real-world problems that John Rawls's theories can't help penetrate. And that's why the philosophy of the Founding Fathers, which is largely the philosophy of John Locke and Montesquieu and a few others, that philosophy is built on real-world constraints, real-world issues, and how to solve them. And the proof of their success is how great a country we have. And so now it's up to us to extend that model into the areas of government that aren't working so well.
Okay. Great way to end the show this week. We're running out of time, guys. So if you're listening to us, check us out at politicalfixradio.com. Politicalfixradio.com. You can see Rick's speech at a TEDx conference. You can see some past archives of videos and audios. You can check out the radio station that we're broadcasting from, and a bunch more. So next week we'll be back. We've got a slightly retooled show next week. It'll still be inside perspective and outside perspective. We'll still have the top story, but you are going to be able to have your say too, and you'll be able to hear Jay representing what you might be thinking in a devil's advocate type of way. So give him an email, jay@politicalfixradio.com, or call us live next week and we'll give you the number when we get here. Have a great week. On behalf of myself, Jay Amernick, and Rick Raddatz, we'll see you next week on The Political Fix.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Valgoss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.